Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hello and welcome to The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Tuesday, the 30th of April. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great to have you with us on the show. Our two experts for today, Michael Gable from Fairmont Equities and Francesco De Stratis from Ord Minnett. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Interesting times, of course. Lots to watch. Big week data-wise, certainly out of the States with lots of data coming to us, plus the Fed decision. Then we've got our own RBA next week. Francesco, what are you watching at the moment? Of course, we've had more calls, CBA today, saying only one rate cut this year, potentially the prospect of a rate hike as the next move.
How
does that concern you?
I think what we're seeing is that inflation's come back, but I think it's sort of plateauing, if you like. And interest rates, where they are at the moment, it's probably normal rates. You know, I think a lot of people got used to those really low rates, and I think the Reserve Bank might sort of get us a bit used to rates at these levels. So I don't see a rate cut this year at all. I think probably first quarter, maybe even second quarter next year, if the data points in that direction. There are a couple of commentators and economists out there suggesting there might be one or two rate hikes, as you suggested there. I think we'd have to see inflation rise a bit for that to occur. I think the economy is travelling just nicely for the central bank, so I think we're just on hold in rates at the moment. And I think the markets will adjust to that. I think we'll probably see a little bit of a sell-off in the markets. We've seen a little bit of it already. Might be a little bit more coming into May. But I don't think it'll be a massive correction in the market. But it'll create some buying opportunities for investors out there. Some are popping up now, but I think there'll be a few more.
Michael, what do you see, particularly when you take a look at the charts? We have, as Francesco said, had something of a pullback recently. Yeah. Where are those support levels at the moment? Which way are you looking for the market to go at this point?
I think around here, there's some good support. I mean, I agree with Francesco in terms of, you know, the pullback is a buying opportunity. At the end of the day, you know, the number of rate cuts, the expectations of those is being pushed out. But that's all because we have, you know, pretty good economic growth. I mean, much better than a lot of people thought we'd have 12 months ago. So, you know, if rate cuts not happening till next year is the price you pay for solid growth and full employment, well, you know, I think that's better for the market than to have a situation where we're, you know, drastically cutting interest rates. I don't believe that there will be rate rises. I think when you have a look at what's contributing to inflation, rate rises won't really fix that. We saw retail numbers out about half an hour before the start of this show, much less than expected. So, you know, the rate rises already in place are doing their job. And I think, you know, these dips are an opportunity because ultimately the market will move higher by the end of the year.
Yeah, you mentioned those retail numbers. I'll reference that in just a moment. First, let's take a look at potential buying opportunity. Let's see if any of these stocks will be included. The first five we're going to take a look at: Insignia Financial, Challenger, Australian Finance Group, Telstra, and South 32. Our stock of the day is Coles. This after it posted third quarter sales up 3.4% to exceed $10 billion, underpinned by more than 5% growth in its supermarkets. Liquor sales fell as shoppers elected to cut back their spending on beer and wine. Go figure. Revenue from Coles continuing operations was up 6.4% in the March quarter, a figure that strips out the Express convenience stores that were sold last year to Viva Energy Group. And taking a look at their performance today in terms of the shares, pretty flat, up marginally there. And in fact, Michael, you're referencing those retail sales numbers that just dropped, in fact, before the show. They actually fell 0.4% in March, Clearly, as those high interest rates, household budgets remaining under pressure, that was against a consensus for a gain of 0.2%.
Yeah.
I guess you're more likely to see that with discretionary stocks, but when you take a look at the staples, and in particular Coles, how are you seeing it?
Well, I mean, in terms of those numbers, it will affect them in some respects with their liquor department, of course, that is still to some extent a bit discretionary, and they did note in their update today that they do expect that growth in that area to be a bit more subdued. But you know, beyond those figures, I think, okay, at the end of the day, is Coles a good investment here? Well, yeah, if we have a look at what it's done over the past 4 years, share price wise, it hasn't really done anything. It did hold up pretty well in around 2022, of course, when there was a lot of concern about a recession. The share market did quite poorly. Defensive stocks like Coles held up pretty well, but now it's lagging the broader market. So now that the market's really moving, as we could see on this chart, Coles has actually been underperforming the market over the past 12 months. So you've got a business where they're growing the revenue 6.4% year on year, so earnings is only a couple of percent a year. You get about 4% on the divvy plus franking. You could pretty much get that putting it in your offset mortgage. So look, I think that as an investment, it's not that enticing here. I think if you've got a share market that will improve, there'll be other opportunities. So it's not one for me. I'd rather put the money to work elsewhere where you can get a better return.
Does that apply to the other retailers, Woolies and some of the other?
Definitely. All those defensives, I just think, now's the time to be rotating out of those. So I still like retail. I mean, we've recently picked up JB Hi-Fi, but clearly JB Hi-Fi has a better growth profile than Coles, and I think that can do well over the next couple of years. So for staples, I think they'll underperform the broader market.
So you actually then put a sell on it, would you? Or a hold?
Yeah, I'd sell it and move into something else. I mean, for example, one of our clients recently, we sold Coles just to pick up some Macquarie shares down here, because Macquarie's pulled back a nice amount. And I think if I look out the next 12 months, I could do better in Macquarie Bank than in Coles.
All right, Francesco. And of course, we should note too that the supermarkets have been under intense scrutiny of late, given that inquiry, allegations of price gouging. That hasn't really been proved, of course, but nonetheless, there's certainly that political pressure to bear.
Oh, look, the bigger supermarkets in particular go through this every couple of years. They have some parliamentary inquiry or something overlook their pricing process. But when it comes down to it, there's fairly thin margins in groceries. There's not a lot in it. They do quite well when there's inflation, and I think we've seen that in their $10 billion quarter, which is the first time they're over $10 billion. It was dragged back, like Michael said, by the liquor side of things. I think what you'll find is, I don't think the volumes changed a great deal in liquor. I think it's just a change in downgrade in quality, if you like. Instead of buying, the top shelf or boutique beers, they're buying the basic beers. If they're buying spirits and so forth, from what I understand reading Coles, is that they've downgraded to pre-mixers, so they're probably buying less of that. And even things like champagne, they're going down to Prosecco. So I think we will find on the discretionary spending side of things, people are still spending and still finding ways to enjoy themselves in that respect, but doing it
on a budget
and a lower quality. And I think you'll find, and they mentioned to that in the supermarket side of things, where there's a lot more emphasis on the store brand rather than the quality brand, if you like, without being horrible to the store brand, because they're probably made by the same people anyway. instead of buying the prosciutto, you're buying the ham, that sort of thing. Instead of buying camembert cheese, you're buying the cheddar cheese sort of thing. So I think what we find, and you'll find that I think in a lot of the discretionary spending side of things as well, that people are still spending, but they're downgrading their quality. Michael mentioned JB Hi-Fi, such a great quality business in the retail space. I think you'll find that some of that spending that was brought forward because of COVID, they're still seeing spending come through, but they're saying that it is on a lower scale, if you like, or downgrading scale. So on Coles, we'd be a hold on that. Wouldn't be throwing it out just for the sake of it. You know, it's a good portfolio stock. We prefer Woolies in that space. Not that I'll be buying Woolies too strongly at the moment anyway.
Yep.
Like Michael said, I think, you know, this sector, you know, the stocks like Coles and Woolies are trading at fairly high multiples. So, you know, it's not the best, you know, if you're looking for growth, it's not the best time to be buying those stocks. I think that'll come maybe, you know, as we see potentially rates come off maybe next year.
All right, so there we go. We've got a sell and a hold for our stock of the day, Coles. Let's get into the stocks as picked by you. The first one, Charlie, wanted to know about Insignia Financial. In fact, we've got two or three financial stocks to get through. This being the first one. It is investment management, super, trustee services, and the like. First half there, it's advice segment. Surprise on the upside, EBITDA increasing by $28 million. Although asset management earnings have continued to decline. So, Francesco, what do you make of Insignia Financial?
Yeah, look, another sector that's gone through, you know, Royal Commission, restructuring, you know, increased costs because of compliance, increased compliance and monitoring. So this is an industry that's I suppose going through a major transition, probably getting towards the back end of it a little bit now. Insignia has made some acquisitions in recent times. I don't think they've changed that strategy. I personally think that, you know, it's trading on a fairly low multiple, so it looks attractive. I don't think there's a huge amount of growth in it, even though, you know, they've got legislative growth backing it with, you know, Australian workers having to put 10% of their income into superannuation. That'll go up. Yeah, we've got an aging population, so their balances are going to increase as well. The only other the flip side of that is that now that they've gone through the Royal Commission, they've gone through a lot of compliance. Now they're going to try and streamline a lot of their compliance and a lot of the cost structures. So still a little bit of restructuring to go. We like Insignia. We're going to accumulate on it. So yeah, if you like, it's a soft buy. Yeah, does it inspire me, the industry? Not at the moment, as far as profitability goes. But they are achieving some fund flows. I'd prefer to be in Insignia than, say, AMP, because I think they've got a lot more restructuring to go through.
Yeah. Well, in fact, we've got another couple of stocks to consider.
We do.
So I'll be interested
yes.
to see how you match and compare those.
Yeah.
Michael?
Clearly there's a lot of restructuring still to go. I think it's too early. Especially given their track record. So over, you know, for quite a few years now, they haven't been able to consistently grow earnings, and the share price is a quarter of where it was about 7 years ago. So you've got a downtrending share price. You have a business that can't consistently grow earnings. And there's a lot of other competitors out in that area. So, yeah, if you're looking to have a few, maybe two or three financials in your portfolio, IFL isn't going to be in the top two or three, unfortunately. So, quite simply, I'd just be selling this one and looking for something else.
All right. Since you're in a selling frame of mind today. But we shall see. All right. Well, I mentioned we've got a couple of the stocks in this sector to consider. The next one being Challenger. And this one picked by Andrew, not me. Once again, it's super, annuities and the like. In fact, it claims to be Australia's largest guaranteed income provider. And third quarter performance update, some sluggish sales there, with annuity sales and life sales falling by 19% and 13% respectively for the third quarter.
Mm.
Michael, what do you think?
It looks a little bit more positive than the previous one. It doesn't excite me too much. So about 90% of their earnings come from annuities, and you'd think that with, you know, where interest rates are now, they should be seeing a lot of interest in that area. As we could see in this chart, it doesn't seem to be translating to an improving share price, unfortunately. On their funds management side, they have seen some funds under management come in, which is good. Not all fund managers can boast that. It just makes me wonder, as we get through, you know, the back half of this year and early next year, as it becomes clearer that rates are coming down and share markets are continuing to recover, I just wonder if they will still continue to see the same interest in their annuity products as they are now. So as I mentioned, the share price isn't really reacting to the, you know, what they can earn from annuities, and I can only see it potentially get harder from here. So again, it's an avoid.
All right, now go on, put a sell on it, just to be...
I'll sell it.
just to be consistent. All right.
Avoids a soft sell.
I'm sure that's a buys later. We'll have to wait for those.
Okay, Francesco.
Yeah, look, we're a hold, so, you know, again, though, but if I didn't own it, I wouldn't be chasing this. You know, I think it's performed fairly against the market and for what it does. A little bit different to IFL, though. You know, it is more of a product issuer rather than advisory business. I don't think they have any advisory business, to be honest with you. It is high risk business because they've got to generate asset returns that exceed their guaranteed annuities. That's obviously takes on a lot of risk. They're very experienced at it and very good at it. They do have some Japanese business as well. So look, it's one of these businesses where it's hard to sort of get a grasp of what the valuations are and so forth. So we're a hold on it. I'd be, you know, saying the same thing as the analyst on this one. It manages funds. It has a good size of funds. It's not attracting huge amounts more or losing huge amounts. So I think where it is trading at the moment is probably fair.
Gee, hardly an inspiring assessment.
It's not an inspiring assessment, but it's not an exciting business either.
All right. Well, let's continue then, because our third stock is Australian Finance Group, picked by Michael. It is one of Australia's largest mortgage broking groups, offers financial solutions as well. And March quarter, well, lodgement activity was up 4.7%, home loan activity up more than 38%. Although I guess you have to bear in mind, non-bank lenders, where their earnings have gone, whether they've troughed, and what's going to happen with interest rates from here on. Francesco, what's your view then on Australian Finance Group?
Yeah, look, this looks quite good. We don't cover it, so I can't really give a recommendation, but it does look attractive. I mean, it's a mortgage broking business, so there's an annuity stream income coming in for them. They do have their own branded mortgage products. I don't know who funds that or how they fund that, so that'd be interesting to see. But looking at over the last 3 or 4 years, you know, their revenue's grown quite reasonably. You know, they're trading on historical PE of about 11 times, so it's not stretching the friendship when it comes to, you know, compare it to the market or other financials. Your market average is probably 14.5. The market currently is around 16. So and that's forward PE. So historically, it looks quite good. And it's got a dividend yield of 6.5% historically, fully franked. So those numbers really stack up for me as far as, you know, solid earnings, solid investment, growing revenue. But again, I'd need to understand a bit more about how they generate their own mortgage products and what sort of risks they take on there, because those sort of risks might explain why it's trading at those discounted levels. But it looks interesting. We don't have a recommendation on it. I would say that, I'd be more positive than negative towards it. It's only a small cap as well, so it's only $410 million. I'd be soft buy then.
I was going to say hold.
Soft buy.
All right. Yeah.
For that type of portfolio, so for a small mid cap portfolio that wants to take on a bit of risk, I think this is quite attractive. Yeah. But for me to say buy, I'd need to do a little bit more digging into how, particularly the risk side of it.
Are there any listed companies in this space that you're finding attractive at the moment?
In the financials?
Yeah.
Outside of
the banks, like particularly the non-bank lenders and so on.
Yeah, look, I'm avoiding insurance stocks at the moment because I think they're the top of their cycle. Michael mentioned Macquarie before. I do like the look of Macquarie at the moment. But, right, you know, that's at the high end of the of the scale. At the bottom end of the scale, yeah, I'm struggling with, you know, even with fund managers and things like that. There's a lot of them out there. So, you know, the competition for mandate is very strong.
Yep.
So it's a difficult one. But yeah, my pick in the financials, if I look at our model portfolios that I manage, Macquarie would be my preferred at the moment.
All right. Michael?
Look, I could be pushed for a hold. I think if I gave the same caveat as Francesco in terms of if it was more of a small to mid-cap portfolio, then you know, it seems reasonable value here. I think it's the right part of the cycle where lending should pick up later on, should pick up again later on in the year. So, you know, all those things add up. You know, if things head the right way, you should get a fairly leveraged return out of an AFG. So, yeah, if we go back a couple of years, this was a $3 stock. Now it's $1.50. So you could see it's very leveraged to the cycle. You know, it has halved in value, but you know, the housing market continues to do well. Rates come down, you know, let's call it this time next year, and credit improves, then you could probably make more money out of this than one of the larger banks. So it's not making any moves at the moment, but it's at those right levels where it can springboard from here. I guess things to look out for. We do have all the banks reporting. I think it's next week, starting next week. So at least that'll give us a bit of an insight into what's happening out there in the mortgage market. I guess a negative to consider is that that mortgage market, the competition in that area looks like it, yeah, it might remain high. So there was some news, of course, yesterday from CBA. They're looking to increase the bonuses, yeah, for their mortgage brokers as competition heats up with Macquarie writing mortgages. So, look, they won't have it easy, AFG, but I think at these levels for a small mid-cap portfolio, if you're happy to hold it for a bit longer until it moves, it's a hold for now. And as that area improves, I think later in the year, early next year, you might see some leveraged upside in AFG.
Okay, let's now get out of those that sector and into telcos, well, the largest of them all, Telstra. And just taking a look at its first half results, pretty much in line with consensus there. Management, they're leaving free cash flow guidance unchanged, but lowered its guidance for earnings due to slowing business demand. The company also benefiting from that Optus outage too of last year, and that particularly saw some growth in its subscriber growth for its mobile division. Okay, Michael?
Yeah, I put this in a similar basket to Coles, where it's one of those sorts of defensive companies, low earnings growth. So you're looking at sort of mid to high single digit earnings growth. Again, I just think there's better opportunities out there. So you get the occasional catalyst like the Optus outage. And I think on that particular day, Telstra shares were up 4 or 5%, but then they just gave it all back again the next day. When we look at this particular chart, just above where that dotted line is, was a major support level around 375 that Telstra has broken under, and it's been unable to regain that level. So purely from a charting point of view, it looks very vulnerable to a pullback. And to me, that makes sense. I think you'd rotate out of Telstra and move into better opportunities in the market.
Okay. So is that a sell or a hold?
Yeah, again, it'd be a sell because I'd move into something better.
Yeah, okay. All right, that makes sense. Francesco?
Yeah, I don't mind adding this to portfolios at the moment. Now, the price has come, well, I think it went below 370 today, if I'm right. So, yeah, you mentioned Telstra's mobile network. You know, they're 40% plus market share. I think they're gaining a little bit more on that because of, like you mentioned, the Optus outage. And you'll probably find there's a bit of a lag from that because some people are still on contracts and things like that. And because of what happened with Optus, when their contract runs out, they might migrate across to Telstra or another competitor. We have seen, I think it was today or yesterday, Optus and TPG announced that they're going to share
yesterday,
networks.
Yes.
So that's going to give them a little bit more competitive advantage against Telstra, but I don't think it'll be enough for them to sort of take massive market share away from them. The area that has been let down is more on the fixed side of things, NBN and so forth, and I think Telstra need to really have a strategy with that NBN network and how they access it and how they deliver it to customers. So they're the two things I look at. It's got a very strong balance sheet. Cash flows are strong. I mean, there was a time a number of years ago where, you know, you're always worried about the cash flow covering the dividends. I don't think there's a problem with that anymore. So we maintain it in our model income portfolio, and it'll probably stay there for a little while. It's been there for a number of years. We'd be buying them at these levels. Might fall a little bit more, but I think the market will start to appreciate that there's value there at the moment.
Well, there we go. We've got a market right there. A sell from Michael and a buy from Francesco. All right, let's get into mining now with South 32. This one picked by Charles. It is a mining and metals company with a focus on alumina, aluminium, energy, coal, manganese, nickel, silver, lead, zinc, the whole gamut there, and with a footprint in Australia, in Africa, and also South America. It was, of course, spun out of BHP almost a decade ago. And just taking a look at its third quarter production results, pretty much mixed. Coal and aluminium volumes came in line. Did actually received a big bump in its share price last week on news of its aluminium and alumina assets, actually, in terms of their performance. So, Francesco, South 32.
Yeah, look, it's a long, it's a low cost producer of base commodities, across the realm of, nickel, manganese, aluminium, like you mentioned. There's a bit of copper in there. I did hear this morning that that they may be on the lookout for acquiring some copper assets. I mean, we're seeing
BHP. Are they all?
Yes. And we've been saying for some time that copper's going to be, the next commodity that's going to come under significant demand. And supply is fairly constrained at the moment, and we're seeing BHP make a play at Anglo, mainly for their copper. 30% of their business is copper. I think it's 750,000 tons a year of copper. So and BHP, when they're trying to make acquisitions, they're not looking at short term; they're looking at long term quality assets. So I think South 32 might be on the same sort of warpath, but obviously at a different scale, not the same scale as BHP. We've got a whole recommendation on South 32, and I'd probably be in line with that. Although if they do make acquisitions, you expect some downward pressure on the share price, because just nature of the market, they'd always expect someone to overpay for assets. So I'd say hold. But expect a bit of weakness if they do make a play at a medium or a pure copper play.
Yeah, well, it's going to be particularly interesting, as you say, with BHP's play for Anglo, given a lot of speculation in the paper today, perhaps Rio could lob an offer as well. So yeah, they're all after those.
Well,
assets.
Not just Rio. There's a couple of other companies that have been mentioned as well. So there could be some strong competition, and we've seen copper prices rise over the last couple of months. I suspect that because there's such a lag in supply and demand is increasing, not just for electric vehicles, but also as countries move towards renewable style energy, the electricity grids require upgrading. Now, I'm no electrical engineer, but I've spoken to people that are in that area, and they say that the electricity grids that are operating at present are not sufficient enough to handle that type of electricity. So, and to upgrade your electricity grid takes copper. So, I'm not suggesting it's going to be a euphoria trade like things like lithium and uranium, and we saw rare earths do things like that as well. I think it's probably going to be a longer trade as well.
Mm. All right. So, you got a hold on South 32.
Hold on South 32.
What's your call?
Yeah, look, I'd have it as a hold as well at the end of the day. So I'm still quite bullish on commodities. And obviously South 32 has quite a few in there, which I think has been to its detriment in the past. You mentioned they've had mixed results. We've seen that over the past year. They come out with a result where, one part's doing okay and then the other part of the business is not doing well, and you get this sort of mixed result, as the analysts say. And the share price has really struggled over the past year compared to compared to other commodity stocks, whether it's the majors or in the copper space, stocks like Sandfire. So so it has been difficult for, I think, South 32 investors, but even the manganese mine that's been affected by the cyclone is offline now. Mm. But we could see that the market's starting to appreciate what they've got and how it'll be needed in the longer term. As Francesco said, I think it'll be a slow burn. It'll move higher. The share price looks like it's sort of bottoming out here and it's heading higher again. We've seen analysts start to upgrade their South 32 targets. So I think it's in the right space. You're at the right time. Is it your top two or three resource stocks out there? Probably not, but if you've got it, I think you'll do well over the next 12 months.
All right, let's sum up the first half of the show then. We began our stock of the day, Coles, out with an update today. Michael, calling it was not enticing. He can't really see the reason to be in there, particularly when there are other opportunities. So he slapped a sell on it, whereas Francesco, a little kinder, he has a hold. But does talk about those thin margins, obviously, with the supermarkets that they have. And also, noticeably, we had retail sales figures out today, which were lower than expected. And that's certainly impacting Coles' liquor business at the moment. Into the stocks as picked by you. Look, we had two or three financial stocks at a smaller end there, beginning with Insignia. It's an accumulate from Francesco. Does point out it's low multiples, but not a lot of growth there. Nonetheless, he's happy to put a sort of soft buy on it. Michael pointing out, look, it is in the midst of restructuring, too early, haven't grown their earnings, so he's got a sell on it. Challenger is same in that space. Michael's got another sell on it. In fact, Francesca's saying it is high risk, hard to get an accurate valuation of the company. He's got a hold on it. Australian Financial Group, Francesco pointing out positive revenue growth, a soft buy from Francesco on the stock. Michael pointing out reasonable value. He's got a hold on it. And just finally there, Telstra, we got a sell from Michael, putting out a low earnings growth there. Vulnerable to a sell-off, he says, taking a look at the chart. Francesco has a buy on it, though, saying it's got a strong balance sheet. In South 32, it is a hold from both. All right, let's catch up with our own high conviction fund here at the Call, picked by our own investment committee. The latest episode of that is live here to watch at ausbiz.com. So, checking in on the portfolio update going into April. Camplify was sold. Woolies in at 5% weighting. Soul Patts and Macquarie were trimmed by 2%. BHP was increased by 2%. And in terms of its performance, it is up almost 30% on a cumulative return basis since its inception in March 2022. So keep your requests coming in. Keep the call switched on to see what our committee is going to be looking at next. Now, next half of the show, we're going to take a look at Cochlear, Cube Holdings, Templar Webster, Bravura Solutions, and Weebit Nano. So let's begin with Cochlear, this one picked by Sam. It is the medical device company which designs, manufactures, supplies those hearing implants in particular to the global markets. And more recently, it's had anticipated revenue increase of 2%. It's also, the ACCC approved its takeover of Oticon, which was a small competitor there, but there's also some issues potentially with Moderna's CMVmax vaccine, which could impact its business because that would improve the hearing impairment among the newborn population. So, all that said, Francesco, what do you think of Cochlear?
So.
Oh,
there you go.
All right.
Look, great business. It's all those things you mentioned have been very, very successful. But at 50 times earnings, to me, it's a bit expensive, or very expensive, even for a healthcare stock that traditionally will trade well above market values. They have had a number of recalls in the past. In this field, you are exposed to that sort of negativity. So if there is a recall, this share price will fall like a rock. Not suggesting there will be or there is one. I'm just saying that it is priced for perfection, and all it takes is a bit of a scratch and it can fall quite heavily. So if you love the stock, at least take some profits off the table.
All right, we're calling it a sell then for you, Michael.
Yeah, it's interesting this one because there is this, but there's clearly a disconnect between how it's trading and the valuations and what the analysts are saying. So yeah, as Francesco said, it looks really expensive. I mean, they've had some great results recently, but you know, to maintain that will be quite difficult. So I think on average, we're looking at, in terms of analyst targets, potentially 20% overvalued, but the way it's trading, it's just not stopping. I mean, it's just got this great uptrend to it. It has pulled back over the past several weeks, but not in a great way, not on big volumes. So yeah, does the market know something that we don't? Look, I just find that quite interesting. I wouldn't be going out and buying it here. I don't hold Cochlear. If I was in it, I'd be tempted to hold it just based on the way it's trading. And then, you know, maybe we need to wait for the next set of results to hopefully for them to justify why it's trading on these sorts of multiples. So I'd be happy to hold, maybe looking for a buy if it continues to drift, but not rushing out to buy it at the moment.
All right, well, there's another diversity of opinion right there in terms of Cochlear with sell and a hold. Our seventh stock is Qube Holdings. This one picked by Scott is a diversified logistics transport infrastructure company. First half growth there was pretty solid. That's the assessment of the brokers and in particular the strength of its Patrick business in the ports there, which benefited from the disruptions that DP World suffered. And Patrick's seen as delivering an impressive result, according to some of the brokers there, with earnings 25% ahead of expectations. So, Michael, what's your view on Qube?
Probably more leaning towards a sell up at these levels. I mean, it doesn't look too expensive. They have held up pretty well due to basically the economy's held up a lot better than everyone expected, of course, over the past year. You know, on the negative side, they've had to push through some wage increases. They've got quite a bit of debt, so they've got some quite a bit of interest expenses as well. So there seems to be a couple of positives, a couple of negatives on the ledger there that just doesn't get me too excited. So I'd probably lean more towards a sell to look for other opportunities.
Okay, so largely negative outlook there, Francesco.
It's rare that I'm the optimist on this show and someone else is a pessimist, but I like Qube. I like the business long term. I think they're growing their market share in the ports and bulk segment. So you know, Patrick's and so forth are doing quite well. Their rail transport shares growing over a diverse customer base as well. The returns on Moorebank are improving, and they're getting additional tenants in there. So then the free cash flow from Patrick Stevedoring, due to efficiencies and automation, I think that counteracts what Michael was saying on the wage growth side of things. So I think there's some completions to be done at Moorebank as well, which is going to improve their bottom line also. So look, it trades pretty much in line with its global peers, but in Australia there's probably less competition than their global peers would have. So we like this business. We do maintain it in growth portfolios. So I'm going to say we've got an accumulate on the stock.
All right. Okay, you've done it again, you guys. Sell from Michael or buy.
We
or accumulate
are, we are on either side of the market. Yeah. So.
All right. Let's get into our next stock. It is Temple & Webster. Now, we're talking about retail at the top of the show there. And this one's picked by Jody. First half revenue then increased 23% year on year, which was pretty much in line with consensus. Second half has commenced with a 35% growth in trading and 1 million active customers. So, Francesco, with a company like Temple & Webster, pretty much, you know, talking about online trade here. How are you viewing that, bearing in mind how the consumer is holding up, as we're talking about, particularly we're seeing some softness in those retail sales?
Yeah, look, I struggle with this one. We don't have any research coverage on it, so we don't have a recommendation, but I'm going to say I'd be, after that little rise in the last 12 months, I'd be out of it. If I look at what I'm seeing as numbers, if these are right, you've got revenue numbers dropping off in 23, reported profit, dropping off in 23. You've got a PE of over 100 times. Now, it's tech and there's growth and that, but it's not showing me growth in these numbers. Now, hopefully these numbers are right, or not hopefully on their behalf anyway. So I struggle with this, particularly when you're looking at, I suppose it's thin margins in retail, but, $8.3 million reported profit for 23 on $396 million revenues, not that attractive for me. So I wouldn't be in this. I'd be selling.
Mm. What about...
And look, they're competing against a lot of others out there.
I was just going to say...
eBays and your Amazons and that, which are here now. So on a online retail platform, unless you're looking at specialists, if you're looking at broader, I think you'd probably be looking at, investing offshore. Yeah.
So that would apply to others in that space, like the Kogans of the world, then you see them struggling going forward?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Unless we get to a point where Australian retail consumers don't trust the foreign. People don't care now. They shop at Amazon. I mean,
as long as it arrives the next day.
Sorry?
So long as it arrives the next day.
Yeah.
Your order.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, if I buy something online, I don't care how long it takes. I'm not that demanding, if you like. But I know my children. If they buy something online, they want doorstep the next day.
Yep.
Come on, get in your car and go to the shop. That's right. But I'm a bit old-fashioned. I'm a little bit old-fashioned, mate.
Yeah. Okay, Michael.
Similar thoughts. I think. Yeah, it's done. It's clearly done really well over the past year. I think it surprised people with how they were able to grow their earnings. They grew their margins. They had this period that did really well. It surprised everybody. Share price went up, but I guess in some ways there were some cracks even only a few months ago. So we spoke about retail sales figures at the top of the show being a little bit under expectations. Even a few months ago when retail sales were still growing on a per capita basis, they were already turning negative. Clearly the immigration situation had helped those retail numbers. So that's not to say there isn't a spot to hold a retailer. I'm still happy to hold JB Hi-Fi, but that's because it's cheaper. The earnings are more consistent. So you've got a Temple & Webster, as Francesco said, trades on a PE of, 100 and something, because they've had a great year, but those earnings aren't consistent. So how do you really value, is it still cheap? Is it expensive? I think given those uncertainties, given the run that it's had.
I say expensive.
Yeah, leaning on the side of, it's probably expensive because they'll be unable to replicate that. So I think you just take your profit here.
Well, just on that, I mean, if that PE is right, 170 times. Now that profit and those has got to increase, tenfold for it to sort of get down to market sort of averages, if you like. So let's say fivefold. Well, their revenue would have to increase significantly more than that. And do you see that occurring? Probably not. So I think there's just too much risk in their ability to get to that level, if you like.
What happens to these companies? Are they taken over, or they just disappear?
Yeah, potentially they get taken over, or or they just they're still profitable. They're making a profit, so they're covering their costs, they're covering their wages, they're paying their staff, that sort of stuff. If things turn sour for them, well, they disappear, or someone picks them up. They could continue to operate for years. I mean, look at Godfrey. What was it?
Godfrey's,
the vacuum guys.
Yeah. Well, it's all about Dyson now, isn't it? So, and they didn't sell Dyson.
No, but I mean, I don't know about other people, but you know, when we built our place, we had the vacuum installed in the wall. So, you know, we didn't need to go and buy a vacuum. So there's a lot of alternatives now. But they still operated, they still paid their wages. But then, you know, at some point, things start to unwind.
A self-vacuuming house, love it.
No, it doesn't self-vacuum.
The Jetsons house.
No, it's just got all the all the pipes are in the walls, so you don't need the...
Just something else to go wrong in the house.
Well, of course, yeah.
All right, let's move on.
And it's reasonably inexpensive compared to buying a vacuum as well.
Okay, all right. Consider that for your next new build, if you can actually afford it, or find a builder. All right, let's get into Bravura Solutions. This one picked by Charlie. Software solutions for wealth management, life insurance, fund administrations, and the like. First half results, they're pretty much, come in slightly ahead of expectations for some of the brokers there, as it concentrated on some cost reductions in particular. Michael, to you.
Yeah, I'm not... I guess it's a bit tricky because up until this year they had been losing money. We could see on that chart now. So yeah, massive underperformer, and then this year they've managed to flip that into a profit, which clearly has surprised the market and the share price has jumped. But as you mentioned, Andrew, a lot of it to do with cost savings. So where to from here? Can they grow? Now can they grow their revenues? Look, Not many analysts cover it. It looks like there's a couple out there. Not one that I'm massively familiar with. So I just can't get a lot of confidence that the business over the next couple of years can, you know, grow their earnings, revenues and earnings from here and continue to see that share price increase. So maybe given the run that it's had, at best a hold. Just not one I can get a lot of confidence on.
Well, I'm not confident of a hold there from you. It sounds more like a
we'll
sell.
We'll call it a sell since that's the...
Really? You're going to put a sell? I convinced you.
Yeah, better opportunities elsewhere.
Okay. All right. Francesco.
Yeah, well, it's actually quite a large market cap, surprising to me, for this type of company. It's $616 million. So it's not large cap, obviously, but it's not a micro cap, that's for sure. Look, they provide the software for wealth management and funds administration. So I think it's more back office processing and middle office processing rather than things like a CRM and that so forth. I think their revenues, once you sign a contract with a business to utilize your software, then it's going to be fairly sticky for a number of years, because for a fund manager to move from one system to another, it's a fairly big task, and therefore when they make those sort of decisions, they don't make them lightly, and they make them for reasonably long periods of time. So I think we don't have a recommendation, we don't have coverage, so it's hard for me to understand how many clients they have, and how, you know, what their terms of their contracts are and how long they will last. But I'm with Michael on this one. I wouldn't be chasing it. If I owned it, and I've obviously seen the rise it's had over the last 12 months, is there much more in it? I struggle to see any more in it at this stage. It's been a pretty wild ride. It's fairly volatile over the last 3 to 5 years. So, if I didn't own it, I wouldn't buy it. If I owned it, I'd be considering removing it.
Do we call that a double sell?
We'll call it a double sell. Yeah,
all right. Why not? Okay. I convinced you on that one. All right. Let's round it out. Our last stock is Weebit Nano. This one picked by Rob. It is, it's actually based in Israel, a semiconductor company, developer of semi memory technology. This is where it gets complicated. It's the ReRAM, resistive RAM, which looks at high performance and better memory solutions for some of those products that addresses, well, particularly the Internet of Things, smartphones, robotics, 5G communications, and AI. That's going to catch your attention, isn't it? Francesco, what can you tell us about Weebit Nano?
I did have a look at this because we have been asked on this program once before about it. I didn't know a huge amount about it, and I went away and had a look at it. It looks very, very interesting. So the type of memory, as you mentioned, is RAM, resistive RAM. It's fairly groundbreaking. I'm no tech head, so I don't quite understand it. But what I do understand is they tell me that it is semiconductor memory, which will be significantly faster, less expensive, more reliable, and more energy efficient than existing flash memory solutions. So if all those things come together, then they're potentially is a massive market for it. I think they do have one buyer, SkyWater, which produces RAM, to use their technology. They put out a quarterly update today, and in that I think they announced a Korean firm, I think it is, DB Hi-Tech, which may move into using it. The unfortunate thing is there's no revenue at the moment, so it's hard to gauge how much or how big this will be. If it works, again, I'm not sure, and I haven't got to that level of it yet, but look, highly speculative. If it works, well, I don't know what the share price, what was the share price at the moment? It's...
let's see if we bring that back up.
Yeah.
there we go, 310.
310. Look, if this works and all of a sudden it becomes a somewhat of a standard type of memory, you'd expect that to be multiples of that, but huge risks.
Specky.
Very speculative.
Is it a specky buy?
Yeah, I'd say yes.
Money
yeah,
you can afford yeah. to lose.
Unfortunately, like you mentioned, that based out of Israel, that might be a bit of a challenge at the moment. So there might be some political issues. But
yeah, we have spoken to them since obviously the war began there, and they right. said it hasn't affected them at all.
Okay.
So
more from a reputational standpoint.
Yep.
Yeah, because people have taken sides.
Yep. Yep.
Not suggesting I'm going to take any sides in this or at all, but people do,
yep.
And they make decisions based on that.
Yeah, so. The political fallout. All right.
Yeah. So if it works, has potential to be massive, I think.
All right. Michael.
Yeah, look, I'd lean towards a speculative hold. You mentioned the AI, and that should get people excited. Well, it looks like it did about a year ago because it was trading at $9.
Yeah.
So I think as a $9 stock, it's not a hold. But now that it's back at $3, you'd be leaning more towards having a look at it. As Francesco said, there's no revenue. They're not making money. So you're taking a bit of a punt that they're going to sign up all these contracts and start making money in the future. So at $3, more palatable than a $9 stock with a story to tell. So maybe you could hold a small position here, and then hopefully they start, they move to profitability, and by then it'll be a few times higher than where it is now, but at least you're buying with a bit more certainty. So so a hold, and I guess the lesson with this is, when you've got a business like this that's not making money, and they're still quite a distance away from making money, don't get caught up in any hype, which some unfortunate investors would have done about a year ago when it rallied up to $9.
The thing with these sort of things is you've got to keep a close eye on it. You can't just buy it and sit in, I mean, you can buy it and sit in the drawer if you're prepared to sort of take that sort of risk, but if you want to make sure that you're understanding what's going on within the business, you've got to keep a close eye on it. Because things can change very, very quickly on the positive and the negative.
Okay, that's where we ended that on Weebit Nano. So let's sum up the second half of the show, beginning there with Cochlear. And it was a sell from Francesco saying, look, it is priced to perfection. He'd be getting out at these levels. And Michael pointing out it is very expensive, but he has a hold on stock. Cube. Michael has a sell on that. Concern there about potential wage increases, the debt that it's carrying at the moment. However, Francesco takes the opposite view. He's got to buy or accumulate on the stock, saying particularly seeing some market share growing there with its ports business. Temple and Webster there. We were talking about retail sales. They have softened in the latest read we got this morning. Francesco pointing out, look, revenue is falling there. He's got a sell, as does Michael. So very negative on Temple and Webster. Michael prefers JB Hi-Fi in that space. Bravura Solutions, Michael pointing out, had been losing money. He he's got a sell on it, as does Francesco too. Certainly wouldn't be chasing at these levels. And finally there, Wibin Nano. A specky buy from Francesco and a specky hold from Michael. All right. Thank you to our guests, Michael. Thank you for joining us from Fairmont Equities.
Thank you.
And Francesco from
Pleasure.
Oorts.
Great
thank
to you. See you.
Yep, good to see you too. All right, any stocks you'd like us to cover, you can go to ausbiz.co/callpicks or write to us on @ausbiz.tv. Thanks for watching.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.